There's a person behind the Oculus Rift. Palmer Freeman Luckey is the inventor of the Rift and the founder of Oculus VR. He's thought a lot about some of the questions that the rest of us are just now starting to ask about virtual reality, and he's with us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, so for those of us who don't know already, tell us as quickly as you can, how did you invent the Rift? I understand it happened in your garage.
You know, it was a long process that happened over the course of several years. I started working on virtual reality myself in 2009, building stuff, modifying old gear, trying to figure out how to make the best virtual reality headset that could be made with modern technology as opposed to some of the previous attempts in the past. And then since 2012, you know, we've founded Oculus and we've built an incredible team that's been working on taking that technology and making it into something that's actually a consumer product rather than just a prototype or a development kit for game developers. And so it's been like a 6+ year project with hundreds of man years put into making it happen. It's a pretty incredible effort.
I want to just talk about sort of the big picture and what this all means. I read that this development in virtual reality is as big as, you know, Apple II, Netscape, Google. I mean, big life-changing moments in technology. Do you really think this is that big of a deal?
I'm a very biased person. So,
yes.
But my honest opinion is that it's actually bigger than any of those things. And that's primarily because virtual reality is potentially the final major computing platform. Those other things were very important, but they were always clearly transitional steps to whatever the next big thing is going to be. With virtual reality, if you have perfect virtual reality eventually, where you're able to simulate everything that a human can experience or imagine experiencing, it's hard to imagine where you go from there. Once you have perfect virtual reality, what else are you supposed to perfect?
There's a book I've read has almost become required reading at Oculus. It's called Ready Player One. It's this utopia where everyone basically lives in virtual reality. I mean, the real world is no good anymore. In a way, the book's a celebration of virtual reality, but then later it's also a warning about the dangers of it. Is that why you think people should read it?
No, not really. I mean, people ask me about science fiction depictions of virtual reality all the time, and generally virtual reality is depicted as this kind of dystopian technology. I don't think that's because the authors are necessarily predicting what will actually happen. It's because that's what allows them to tell a good story. A good story needs conflict, and virtual reality is a great hypothetical way to create conflict. Something I've said in the past is that in some ways, the future is going to be more boring than we think. I don't think that VR is going to lead to humanity being enslaved in the Matrix or letting the world crumble around us. I think it's going to end up being a great technology that brings people closer together. I don't think that VR is going to lead to humanity being enslaved in the Matrix or letting the world crumble around us. I think it's going to end up being a great technology that brings people closer together, that allows for better communication, that reduces a lot of environmental waste that we're currently doing in the real world. And it's probably not going to be nearly as interesting as depicted in science fiction as far as the bad things go.
But come on, that's a better story.
Well, exactly, and that's why they write it. It is a better story, and it's fun to think about, and that's why we're going to keep reading stories for decades about how VR is, you know, ruining the youth, it's ruining business, it's ruining communication. It's the same pattern that's always played out with lots of things in the past, with books, with movies, with television, with jazz music, with rock and roll and swing dancing. I mean, everything has had this negative attachment to it because that's a better story. It's more interesting. It's more fun to read about.
Why do you think it's a good book for people to read?
Ready Player One is a good book for people to read to understand virtual reality because it is very accessible. It's not something that was written for techno heads that need to understand every bit of the technology. It's a very realistic depiction as far as the technology goes. Everything in Ready Player One is going to happen on the technology side in the next 10 or 20 years. There's nothing far-fetched like the neural networks and network interfaces of the Matrix. But the real reason is because it shows virtual reality connecting an entire world in a virtual space, creating a digital universe that exists parallel to our own, where people are living, working, playing, doing all kinds of things, not just gaming, not just watching movies, but really an entirely parallel world where everyone is connected. And I think that that is the long-term promise of virtual reality. That's what science fiction has been promising us for decades. And Ready Player One gets that across in a way that anybody can understand.
How many hours a day would you say you spend in virtual reality?
It depends on the day. Sometimes it's all day, but usually no more than a few hours.
Okay. And what's an all-day day like? I mean, what makes you decide to do that? Because you're working or because you're experiencing?
Yeah, well, the only days that I have time to do that are ones where there is a work reason for me to be in VR all day. So if we're testing games, getting ready for launch, going through quality assurance on all of our systems.
When you do spend all day in virtual reality, like, what's it like when you're not doing it? You know, is there kind of a, you know, like shaking your head, coming back? Is there an adjustment period?
I mean, it's kind of depends on what you're doing. It's the mismatch is not necessarily from the virtual reality hardware itself. It's from the disparity in experience. You know, if you are if you're having a very high adrenaline, high movement experience in virtual reality, and then all of a sudden you're back in your office, that disconnect is pretty notable. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're just using it for virtual reality, you know, teleconferencing, or you're just modeling something, there's really no kind of impact moving back and forth between the real and the virtual world.
Wow.
It's a bit like that shock when you're in a movie theater and you're just watching the movie and you're in the dark, and then you walk outside and it takes you a few minutes to really reconnect with reality.
It's like a culture shock. Yeah. You know, you talked about how science fiction writers like to write about how things like virtual reality are bad. And you say that's not necessarily true. It's probably something that will make our lives better. Knowing what you know, how are our lives going to be different in 15 years?
How are things going to be different? I think people are going to spend a lot of time communicating in virtual reality instead of communicating through existing technological mediums. Things like email and Twitter and Facebook and text messaging, they all work reasonably well, but we use them because they're convenient and cheap and easy, not because they're the best way to communicate with somebody. Today, the best way to communicate with someone is still face-to-face. Virtual reality has the potential to change that, to make it where VR communication is as good or better than face-to-face communications, because not only do you get all the same human cues as real-world communication, you basically suspend the laws of physics. You can do whatever you want. You can be wherever you want. I think that that's going to lead into a huge shift in how we communicate with people at a distance. I also think that it's going to cut down on a lot of time and money and resources that we spend flying around the world for mundane things like business meetings or conferences. Because if you can accomplish those things as well or better in virtual reality, there's no reason to burn thousands of gallons of jet fuel a year, you know, popping all around the world. That's one of the things I'm most excited about, is being able to do virtual reality teleconferencing between all our offices. And we've already started experimenting with this, you know, having people in the China office, in our Japan office, in our European offices, and here, all in the same virtual space as if we're sitting in the same room. No adjusting to time zones is nice too.
So I can imagine meetings changing and that being an okay thing, but what about things like friendship, love? Is that going to change?
It's probably going to be changed, but it's going to be difficult to predict how it will change. Like, if you look at existing communication technology changes over the last 10 or 20 years, obviously they've changed the dynamics of human relationships, but I don't think anyone could have predicted how that would happen, you know, when the internet first came out or when telephones were first invented. It really had to get out into the wild where people could see it and start using it before people could make any kind of valid predictions about the impact.
Right. I understand you at one time wanted to be a journalist, actually. You wanted to write about tech.
That is right. And I even did so for a time. I was the online editor at Cal State Long Beach's school newspaper, the Daily 49er.
So do you still think about doing that writing, or do you think about how virtual reality will change the way we communicate with each other?
I do think about all of those things. It's going to be really interesting. I think that one of the first things that we need to keep in mind as virtual reality moves forward for things like journalism is how to use it ethically. People understand the limitations of videos and of pictures and of text. They understand that they're subjective takes, and they understand that they don't capture the entire big picture. With virtual reality, people are naturally inclined to take something they experience as if it was real, as if it was something that actually happened in the way they saw it happen on an innate level. It really induces that sense that you were an eyewitness firsthand seeing this thing happen. And we're going to have to be very careful to make sure that we use the technology responsibly in journalism, to make sure that it's not used to push propaganda or warped depictions of the facts.
That's Palmer Luckey. He's the inventor and founder of Oculus VR. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.